Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am doing great. This is sort of the culmination of several weeks of programming that we're having tonight. So, if you're just tuning in to this series, this is not a bad time to join in. So.
You know, we say this a lot, but boy, have we got a big one tonight.
Okay? That's right.
This is a big one. We've got a very, very special guest. Thomas Frey is with us to discuss the list of items that we've been talking about over the past 3 weeks on the show, actually. His article, 72 Stunning Things in the Future Will Be Common 10 Years From Now That Don't Exist Today. We're going to do a little recap on that since we spent so much airtime talking about it. But we're also going to talk about some other great futuristic stuff. So, you know, Stephen, sometimes we stand on ceremony, but not tonight. We're going to bring out our guest. I would like to introduce him. Over the past decade, Thomas Frey has built an enormous following around the world based on his ability to develop accurate visions of the future and describe the opportunities ahead. His keynote talks on futurist topics have captivated people ranging from high-level government officials to executives in Fortune 500 companies, including NASA, IBM, AT&T, plus many others. Because of his work inspiring inventors and other revolutionary thinkers, the Boulder Daily Camera has referred to him as the father of invention. The Denver Post and Seattle Post Intelligencer have referred to him as the Dean of Futurists. He's been featured in thousands of articles for both national and international publications, including The New York Times, The Huffington Post, The Times of India, USA Today, and many others. He currently writes a weekly Future Trend Report newsletter and a weekly column for FuturistSpeaker.com. Thomas Frey, welcome to The World Transformed.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great and long overdue. You have provided so much material, not just over the past 3 weeks, but over the past 11 years we've been doing the show. We've often referenced stuff that we've read on your blog and topics that you've introduced and helped to popularize or add to the public discussion. So it's a real honor having you on, and we're looking forward to talking with you over the next two nights here on The World Transformed. Stephen, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the show, usually Wednesday is our amazing show. Tonight, this week, we're extending amazing all the way back to Monday. So we've got an amazing Monday.
That's right. It's an overflow. It's an overflow. Well, in all of our years of doing this, Phil, I think this is the first time we've ever devoted, 3 weeks like this to a single article. And so, Thomas, I have to say, thanks for the show material. It's been great. And what we've done over the last 3 weeks is we've kind of gone through these 72 items, and I say we've mostly agreed with pretty much everything you've had to say about these things. It's quite remarkable that there's so much that could potentially happen that's within the realm of possibility. So anyway, I have to ask though, what caused you to think, let's pull all of this together? It was kind of an ambitious project, wasn't it?
Well, it was. I was, See, I'm always struggling with this idea of how do I paint a better picture about the future? This whole idea of how do we put it in a form that people can relate to. A lot of times I talk about jobs going away, and then I think, well, that a few years ago I made the prediction that by 2030 over 2 billion jobs are going to disappear, and I ended up getting quoted on that just by newspapers, TV stations, magazines all over the world, and it continues still today. And I didn't want to be viewed as the negative futurist, the one that everything's going to fall apart, but because that's not what I'm thinking. It wasn't intended to say that 2 billion people are going to be unemployed. It's intended to be more of a wake-up call that we're going to have to create new jobs at a faster rate than ever before in history. And so this whole idea of an accelerating future, this whole idea of things are changing at a rate that's faster than we've managed to deal with any time in the past, how do you portray that? How do you illustrate that in a way that kind of grabs people's attentions and makes them kind of wake up and say, oh, well, we should be paying attention to this. We're going to get blindsided here sooner or later, so we need to come to grips with all this change happening in the world around us. So the 72 items it's one of my, I use this kind of unusual brainstorming technique to come up with them. And so I'm thrilled to actually have you talking about some of these things, because I think more people need to know.
Yeah.
You know,
one thing we've often said, Phil, in our conversations is that, even great, movies and entertainment things, sci-fi type things that attempt to predict the future, the future is always exactly like right now, except for one thing.
Right.
Gattaca. Yeah. I mean, as awesome as that movie is, it's everything's exactly the same except for, genetic engineering. And so this list of 72 kind of brings home to the fact that it's everything. It changes. I mean, it's going to be so much that in order to understand where things are going, you really have to kind of broaden your perspective a little bit.
Well, I started out the article talking about what are the things that are different from 10 years ago. And, when you start going down the list, oh, my God, there's a lot of things that have just changed in 10 years. I haven't been paying attention to that. I mean, when I was a kid, I mean, we still had dial telephones. We'd go to gas stations. We'd get maps all the time. We still had typesetters in the movie theaters or in the newspapers and projectionists in the movie theaters. And I mean, all of these things have changed and morphed and shifted. And so trying to kind of keep all these things in perspective, it's a real challenge. A couple of years ago, I wrote a couple columns on what it was like to be a teenager in 1994, 2014, and 2034. And then I had to do all this research to figure out, okay, what was life back in 1994? That was rather challenging to actually sync up with the technology of 20 years ago. I mean, that was a real struggle because I had to do all this research and looking on Wikipedia, and I don't know how you would have done that research 20 years ago, actually, before Wikipedia was there.
How did we ever find things out 20 years ago?
Well, I think we just spent a lot of time being ignorant about things.
Ignorance, you got really desperate. You called a library and had a reference librarian look something up for you, right? But I mean,
yeah. Yeah, you know, smartphones have been the death of bar bets. You know, people would bet at the bar on something that now you can just look it up, and so there's no bet.
It gets settled before before the fight can break out. It's kind
of right. One of the things I talk about is that, you know, 20 years ago, if you were in a library, let's say a large library like the Library of Congress, and you had some tough questions to answer, it could very likely take you 10 hours to answer each question, just because the tough questions, you'd have to go through card catalogs and do a lot of research. Today, that same search can be done in 10 minutes, you know, given on a search engine using your keyboard and a screen. And so the next iteration of that is the 10-second interface. Our ability to have somebody come up to you and ask you a question, and then we somehow have, I don't know, some helmet or something we have in our head that we can sync our way into the internet. And so we go from 10 hours to 10 minutes to 10 seconds. And then after that, it's the 10-millisecond interface. And I can't wait for that one.
Wow. That's the kind of sweeping stuff that actually people are very resilient about, I've observed. You know, you talked about people getting blindsided, and there definitely are the changes that come along and they blindside us. But as you were speaking about how much has changed over the last 10 years, we actually did our 500th podcast about a month ago. So that was over the course of about 11 years. And we went back and we tracked some of the things we were talking about then and compared the progress that had occurred with them, you know, these futuristic topics that only geeks were talking about, some of them that have become these completely mainstream things over that period of time, and the things that we, you know, that we weren't expecting and the things that we were. But it doesn't seem to matter all that much. People get used to things really fast, don't they?
Well, they certainly do, and the things they don't get used to don't last very long in the marketplace. All the best laid plans, you can have your new Coke, or you can have something you absolutely think is going to change the world, smell-o-vision, or whatever it might be, and then it reaches a sudden death in the marketplace, and so then we just kind of shrug and move on. It's rather interesting, our ability to adapt and how quickly we're adapting. And as I travel around the world, I get to see people in other countries, and they are, a lot of them are trapped in the past. They are, it's going to take them quite a while to catch up, but some of them are just going to be able to leapfrog us and to move past us without ever having to go through these kind of iterative stages that we've been through. So
yeah, no legacy problem.
Right. So that's been interesting to watch.
Absolutely. Well, let's go back to the list just for a minute. Your categories for unexpected changes were, let me just read these off. You had 3D printing, virtual and augmented reality, flying and driving drones, driverless cars, the Internet of Things, health technology, artificial intelligence, and then you had these two more generic categories, transportation and your catch-all miscellaneous category. When you look at all of these, where do you think we'll see the biggest impact in our daily lives over the next 10 years? Or where's the next big surprise coming from, I guess?
Oh, the thing that we're not anticipating. Well, you know, there's a company that's developing a new kind of drone that will be used for actually transporting shipping containers. A flying drone that just latches onto the top of a shipping container and moves it. That I think raises the specter of all kinds of interesting things happening. I do see lots of things happening with swarm bots that we're just not paying attention to right now. So having I like to use this illustration of you're stepping out of the shower in the morning. And everybody has their personal swarm of, let's say, 10,000 of these really tiny flying drones that as soon as you step out of the shower in the morning, these drones zip around you and they dry you off. And then they go ahead and they fix your hair, you do your makeup, they shave you, and then also as you're getting ready, then they assemble themselves as your clothing for the day. A swarm like this has multifunctions. It's designed to protect you, to assist you. It becomes your communication device, your information device. It becomes all of those things. And so as depending on what mood you're in, the swarms will change color. It will change your fashion. It'll style you in a different way. And as you walk out of your house and you're going to work, then this is a Superman scenario. Your swarm will just fly you to where you're going to go.
Pick you up and carry you off. Oh,
right,
what an image.
Right.
This is Jay Storrs Hall talks about utility fog, right? This is the same basic idea. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, when you have, yeah, something like that. When you have lots of drones working together, we suddenly lose our perspective on this. I thought it was interesting how the last Star Trek movie worked with swarms, but they were evil swarms, and I would just assume talk about good swarms rather than evil ones. There's a lot of work being done on 3D printing spider bots. So if you think about the way contour crafting is being done right now, where you put a layer of concrete upon another layer upon another layer upon another layer until you 3D print an entire building, well, the way the 3D printing spider bots work is they will walk over and pick some concrete out of a vat and then walk up and climb up the side of a wall and put this concrete in place, and then they'll go down and get some more concrete from the vat and put some more in place. And while you think about one of them doing that, then you should start thinking about 150 or 250 of them doing it and building a building 24 hours a day, putting things in place meticulously until it's all completely constructed, whatever it is. So over the coming decade or two, we're going to see all these headlines about this is the first 3D printed post office, this is the first 3D printed hospital, this is the first 3D printed baseball stadium, and then we'll get into the really big structures like the floating islands and the ships and the resorts and things like that. But I find that stuff absolutely fascinating.
You know, I guess
your window for... I'm sorry, Phil. I was just going to say the window for that, I guess, would be beyond the 10 years then. Things like that. I suppose we're going to see 3D printed buildings much sooner than the next 10 years. But some of these things, like these personal drone swarms, would guess would be beyond the 10-year window.
Right, right. Every January, I like to go to the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, and every year, this friend of mine that goes there, he always comes back and says the same thing. He says, "Yeah," he says, "but there was nothing new," in some respects, he's right, because I always come back and I think, oh, "Wow, that's totally amazing," but there's thousands and thousands of televisions on display at the Consumer Electronics Show, and every year they're a little bit better. So from one year to the next, you don't notice much, but every year they're a little bit brighter screen, a little flatter, more curved, better battery life, more downloadable apps. So if you compare from one year to the next, you don't notice much difference, but over 15 years, televisions are just remarkably different. I often talk about how the iterators are more valuable than the innovators, because a lot of times we have something that's absolutely totally new, something that's way out in left field, that comes out of the woodwork, Whenever we have something that's radically different, we have to work our way through the crappy stages before we get to something that's worth talking about. And with all of these technologies, like the swarm technology, we're going to see bits and pieces of that cropping up over the next couple of years here. But to get to something that's really good, it will take, maybe a decade or two to get to the really good stuff.
I wonder if, looking at kind of the innovators versus the, I'm sorry, could you give me that formula again? That was good. What is that?
Yeah. The iterators are more valuable than
the innovators.
Iterators
versus innovators. Yeah, because one of the things I observed was that most of the items on your list are these kind of unexpected, interesting changes, but they're not the big earth-shaking changes, right? They're not the, they're interesting. You know, when you talk about fireworks being launched from drones or, you know, 3D baby models for expecting mothers or, robot dog walkers. Those are all interesting, but they're not the self-driving car, right? Or
right.
Stephen and I have talked a lot about how the iPhone, came along and just has been this transformative technology, right? This technology that just changes our relationship to technology and with each other and just kind of how the world works, right? You look at you look at how much change has occurred around that over the last decade. Is that how the future really happens? Is it the big changes or just a whole bunch of tiny little changes, or what is the future made of really when you come right down to it?
Yeah, well, it takes a lot to create a whole new category, and so I framed the thinking in this around 8 different categories and then the miscellaneous. So I use this brainstorming technique called, it's really crude, but it's called the checkerboard. So I just come up with 8 categories, and then I try to put 8 things in each category, 8 different ideas.
Oh.
And then if one doesn't sound like a good one, then I wipe that one out and put another idea in there. And so it's really kind of basic, and then this one had the miscellaneous group, which added another 8, and so that came up with the 72. But all of these categories were already in place; they're already defined. Now, one of the new ones that's going to be coming out, new categories, is going to be tube transportation, and I think that's going to be absolutely fascinating because that's going to be so disruptive. I actually went to kind of a launch ceremony up in Fort Collins last night for ET3. ET3 is a competitor to Hyperloop, and they've just gotten in their first 32-foot section of tube that they're working on the capsule that goes inside of it, and as we put together plans for tube transportation around the world, there's all these kind of format wars that will happen first. And Hyperloop is designed around large bus-sized vehicles, and ET3 is actually designed around car-sized vehicles that'll seat 4, 5, or 6 people at a time, but will go way faster. In a 5-foot diameter tube that they're using, they're expecting they can achieve speeds of up to 4,000 miles an hour. So a trip from New York to Beijing can happen in 2 hours. For a price that's probably around $100.
But you have to lay that tube down, right? I mean, you've got to build a
right.
tube from New York to Beijing to get that to,
yeah.
to make
and
that
so
happen.
when you start thinking about this, though, If you get a pilot project off the ground and it works very well, then suddenly every country in the world lines up and says, "Hey, I want to be on that network." And just in a very short period of time, it kind of unfolds as the largest infrastructure project on planet Earth. It'll take 50 to 70 years to build it out. It'll cost trillions of dollars. Employing hundreds of millions of people, but it will pay for itself as it goes. But it suddenly changes the whole world dynamic, because you can then send a pallet of goods from New York to Beijing in 2 hours. And somebody can wake up in the morning and they can decide, oh, I think I'll have breakfast in Denver, lunch in Tokyo, and then dinner in Helsinki. And you do that because you can.
Right.
We become a very fluid society, and that type of thinking is so far beyond anything that we can conceptualize right now. But that's the potential of something like this.
Okay, that's going to conclude part one of our discussion with Thomas Frey, and we'll pick this up again on Wednesday with part two, where we'll go a little deeper into the future. But what do you think so far, Stephen?
Excellent, excellent. This has been a lot of fun. And yeah, part two promises to be even more mind-blowing, because we're going to, you know, look beyond that 10-year window to see big changes, on out to the end of time, right? So, yeah, definitely want to be a part of that.
I said it's going to be amazing both nights, but the really amazing one is going to be Wednesday when we get into that part two. Well, thanks to our guest Thomas, who will be back with us again on Wednesday. Thanks to you, Stephen, and for all of you for being with us. And we will be back with a brand new show on Wednesday, part two of our discussion with Thomas Frey. And until next time, live to see it.